It's dropping out the audio. The video looks good, but it's dropping out the audio.
Did you say it wasn't coming through? Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, December 15, 2025. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you are listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us live by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on the donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on a scripture reading where we left off last week. We are in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 4. Let a man so account of us as of the ministers of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. But with me it is a very small thing that I should be judged of you or of man's judgment. Yea, I judge not mine own self, for I know nothing by myself. Yet am I not hereby justified, but he that judgeth me is the Lord. Therefore, judge nothing before the time, until the Lord come, who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness, and will make manifest the counsels of the hearts, and then shall every man have praise of God. And these things, brethren, I have in a figure transferred to myself and to Apollos for your sakes, that ye might learn in us not to think of men above that which is written, that no one of you be puffed up for one against another. For who maketh thee to differ from another? And what hast thou that thou didst not receive? Now, if thou didst receive it, why dost thou glory, as if thou hadst not received it? Now ye are full, now ye are rich, ye have reigned as gods without us. And I would to God ye did reign, that we also might reign with you. For I think that God hath set forth us the apostles last, as it were appointed to death. For we are made a spectacle unto the world, and to angels, and to men. We are fools for Christ's sake, but ye are wise in Christ. We are weak, but ye are strong. Ye are honorable, but we are despised. Even unto this present hour we both hunger and thirst, and are naked, and are buffeted, and have no certain dwelling place, and labor, working with our own hands. Being reviled, we bless. Being persecuted, we suffer it. Being defamed, we entreat. We are made as the filth of the world, and are the offscouring of all things unto this day. I write not these things to shame you, but as my beloved sons, I warn you. For though ye have 10,000 instructors in Christ, yet have ye not many fathers. For in Christ Jesus I have begotten you through the gospel. Wherefore I beseech you, be ye followers of me. For this cause have I sent unto you Timotheus, who is my beloved son, and faithful in the Lord, who shall bring you into remembrance of my ways which be in Christ, as I teach everywhere in every church. Now, some are puffed up as though I would not come to you. But I will come to you shortly, if the Lord will, and will know not the speech of them which are puffed up, but the power. For the kingdom of God is not in word, but in power. What will ye? Shall I come unto you with a rod, or in love, and in the spirit of meekness?
Okay, before we get started, I just want to share that I was invited to a couple of weeks ago. Let me see if I can find a page first. I believe it's under today's issues, and it's radio and TV interviews that we've had. We haven't had many of those in a while, but anyway, I was on an audio chat with QAnon, SGAnon, I guess it's called, and there was a couple of people on it, and people might want to listen to this. You can find this video here under today's issues. Come down to NLA Radio and TV Interviews, and it's the first video down below a lot of these audio interviews. So, anyway. All right, Jan, do we have any questions tonight? Jan?
Yes, you were cutting in and out there. If you're asking if there were any questions, John, you're free tonight. I don't have any questions at all.
Okay. Am I coming through others? I mean,
you are now again.
Okay. Anybody else having problems with my audio?
Sounded good to me.
All right. So it's probably on Jan's side. I know you have been having problems with your computer anyway, haven't you, Jan?
Yeah, I have a DSL, which is a very, very, very slow way of doing business. So
there you go.
That sometimes affects the quality of your voice and so on.
Okay. All right. Anyway, the queue is open if anybody wants to get into the queue. I see one person has gotten into it already. It's a *6 and a 1 if you're on a phone. And there should be a button to get into the queue if you're on an app or a browser. So again, anybody wants to get into the queue. We'll take a first caller. There's one caller in the queue. 313 area code. Let me unmute you. What is your first name and your state? You got the mic.
I'm from Detroit, Michigan.
Okay, first name?
My first name?
Yeah.
My first name is Kawan, last name Turner.
All right. Well, we only needed your first name. What did you say your first name was?
My first name is Kawan.
Kawan. Okay, Kawan. You got the mic. You got a question or a comment?
Hello?
Yep, go ahead. You got the mic.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go right ahead.
You said go ahead with my question?
Yep, go right ahead.
I was reading your book called The UCC Connection on how to free yourself from illegal trannies.
Okay, well, that book was stolen from me quite some time ago, and some things were added to it, and I never was able to get it up. But what questions do you have on it, on the UCC?
You said it looked like, what you said, I couldn't hear you.
Yeah, I've had a couple of books. That was one of them was stolen, but they did change some things in there. And so, again, I didn't write that book particularly. But what do you have? You have questions on the UCC, or what's your question?
Yeah, I was wondering if the UCC, the commercial code, 1-3, is it still like possible to use at court or no?
Well, no, I wouldn't use that in the courts at all. Again, you know, you can use statutes if you want, and you can use them to control, you know, those people working for some government agency, judges also, because they work for a government agency in a sense. They're officers of the court. And but what are you trying to do? Well, what's your strategy?
I'm facing a criminal matter, and I was trying to see if, like, I could, like, reserve my rights. And I know they were saying, like, the criminal matters are all made up, and I don't know if they got, like, have jurisdiction over me. I just was reading that book and was seeing, like, they say you can take your birth certificate to the court and let them know that you're the beneficiary.
Yeah, that particular book I didn't write at all. So, but the guy who wrote that, who put that together, I think he stole that from someone else. He did put some of my stuff in there, I think. But he did steal another book, a handbook of mine, and I haven't been able to really reclaim it. But in any event, no, that's not a good strategy at all. You're not going to get anywhere. You're going to have a problem. Is what kind of a court are you in? Are you in a town court, a village court, a state court? What kind of court are you in?
I'm in like a circuit court for a criminal matter, a felony.
All right. Well, you know, again, they do have jurisdiction over criminal matters.
Hello.
The problem is that you don't have they don't have courts of record opening, and you do much better. It'll be a trial by jury, won't it?
Yeah.
Is there an indictment?
Yes.
Okay, so if you've been indicted, then that is an official, you know, filing of a court. One of the problems, of course, is that a lot of these juries, most of them, have been captured, you know. They've been stacked. And so it's very difficult to fight against them. You've got a lawyer, I presume, because you know, I don't know what kind of background you have in knowledge of the court system.
I have read something that said, like, retaining a lawyer was not the thing to do, but I do have a lawyer, like, on standby, but I don't know if I should. I thought I wasn't going to have to use, but I was going to try to represent myself. Is that not the thing to do?
Well, no, you're not going to be able to get through to them if you try to take care of your own business in the court. Unless you have knowledge of the court. You have to understand how due process works. You have to understand all these things, and you have to understand what court, what jurisdiction you're in, and you have to be able to defend yourself. And if you don't have some background and knowledge in these things, you don't have a chance at all. I hate to tell you to use the lawyer, but considering your situation, I don't think you have much of a choice. You know, you should discuss your case with the lawyer, if you have one, and try to be as involved as you can in what it says and how this case goes forward. Again, one of the problems is they shut down courts of justice a very long time ago, back in 1938. And you can't get into what's called a court of record, which gives you a lot more power and authority. And if you had some background in understanding how the court system works, you know, you'd be able to take care of your own business in the court, come in your own person. You know, what you might want to do, and everybody really should be doing this, because you never know when you're going to get stuck in a situation in your court, and you do want to really take care of your own business. But for those who are interested in that, if you go under Education Starts Here, you can come down and click on Court Access in the Common Law course, and you can take that course. You know, we only charge $125 for that, but it teaches you due process, how the court system works. It's a 90-hour course, and how to write papers, you know, how to file papers in the court. But I don't know, if you go into court now, you know, it takes a while to learn this stuff. And if you stick on it really hard for about a year, you know, and spend some time every day in the course, and also, you know, read a lot of court cases, because that's how you learn to write, particularly Supreme Court cases, you know, which is really mostly decisions, but you can get a lot of stuff that you can use in their decisions. And, of course, we have a tremendous amount of footnotes that are available in the course. We also have those for free also. You see, you can go download that under law, and you'd come into court forms and process. I'm pretty sure we have links there where you can download footnotes. Let me see where that might be. Yep, footnotes right here. Right under downloads here, you download footnotes. Okay. This is information here, you know, the Black's Law Dictionary, and also Bouvier's, and many other things that you can download, and of course the footnotes, Very powerful stuff to use to write your papers, make your arguments. But again, it sounds like you don't really have much of a background in it. So you're not going to be able at this point in time represent yourself. And I shouldn't use the word represent yourself. You should be coming in personam, in your own person.
So you recommend attorney?
Well, I hate to tell you that, but you don't have much of a choice. If you go in there with the man on the land stuff using the Universal Commercial Code, and you try to make your argument and bring in your birth certificate and try to make an argument that they don't have authority over you and so on and so forth, you're not going to get anywhere with that. They're just going to put you, you're going to lose the case. They may even force you to take a representative, you know, a lawyer to represent you anyway. And you just don't have the knowledge to be able to do this. You know, if it was a traffic court, you know, if you were in a town court, a village court, they don't have jurisdiction over you. They don't have personam jurisdiction over you. They may have the jurisdiction over the commercial activities or whatever kind of codes they may try to pull upon you.
They have statutory jurisdiction. Is there rules and criminal procedures for statutory jurisdiction?
Well, statutory jurisdiction really doesn't apply to us. That's the problem. You see, in 1934, legislators passed the Rules Enabling Act. And in 1938, the Supreme Court executed those rules. And in the process of executing those rules, they fused together law and equity. Equity is legislative law. Law is common law or natural law. But they brought them together and called it civil law and placed us under Roman civil law. So that's that's the version a violation to their to the Constitution. And but we can't really do much about that right now. We've been battling in the courts for quite some time to try to make changes on that issue. But we'll hope from, since Trump is in power, maybe by next year sometime, hopefully, depending on how things go with what he's doing in the courts, maybe we can win our courts back. But it's an uphill battle. But either way, nevertheless, if there's criminal charges against you, even if we're in a court of justice, you don't have the ability to really make your arguments in the court. And again, I'm going to tell you, if you try to use commercial code against these people, first of all, they're going to think you're crazy. So, and they're going to call you a sovereign citizen. And you're not going to win. They're just going to beat you up, and you're just definitely going to lose. At least with a lawyer, you might be able to win. I don't know.
You said, with what I might be able to win?
With a lawyer, you might be able to win. They have a high rate of success when they go after you criminally, a very high rate of success.
See, I pay $30,000 for a lawyer, and it's like the lawyer, even my co-defendants, they all pay high prices for lawyers, and they're not doing anything. They're not following the right motions.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask you if you want to say what are the charges? Was violence involved in this or no?
No violence. It's a drug possession charge.
Okay. What state are you in again?
I'm in Detroit, Michigan.
Okay, Michigan, Detroit.
The charges out of Tennessee, Knoxville, Tennessee.
What kind of drugs?
Hardcore
drugs?
Yeah.
But, anybody wants to use drugs. It's against the law. It should be against the law, and it is against the law to sell it. But if you're using it, I don't see how that can be against the law. Of course, they write it against the law because they make money by putting people in jail. Everybody makes money by going through the trials.
1 minute remaining.
And so that really moves you through. You know, it's difficult. So, but I'll tell you, I don't think you have a chance at all because you don't have the time to learn how to, you know, represent or take care of your business in the court yourself. You just don't have that ability, and you don't have the time to learn. But you definitely should go and try to learn it.
Do you know any good attorneys I can retain?
No, not at all, really. I know a couple, but they're not close to you where they can do anything. And you know, again, even they have a tough time, even though they understand the problem, or particularly one anyway. Even though they understand the problem, they still have a problem in the courts, and the courts do whatever they please. So I don't know, you know, what else I could tell you on that. I don't think you have a choice but to use a lawyer. You know? I don't know, you got anything else you wanted to ask? You're still there, or we lose you?
Hello?
Yep, go ahead. Yeah, anything else? I mean, I don't have anything else to tell you other than to try. You know, you have a choice. You don't have a choice but to use a lawyer, especially if you're in jail. It sounds like you're in jail at the moment.
Yes, that was my brother. The phone had hung up. He just asked me to call the line to see if he can seek some legal advice. Appreciate you, man.
All right, well, good luck with your case, and, you know, hopefully you'll get a lawyer who will do his job and help you out there.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Okay, we'll take our next caller. He's coming in as anonymous. And by the way, there's nobody else in the queue. We only got one person in the queue. So if you're on the phone, it's a *6 and 1 to get into the queue. And if you have an app, on an app or a browser, should be a button there to get into the queue. But we'll take our next person, anonymous. Go right ahead. You got the mic. You've been unmuted. What's your first name and your state?
Yes. Good evening, John. This is Elizabeth in Arizona.
How you doing, Liz?
Hi. I'm really trying to. I'd like to get through this more quickly, but that, you know, I'm old enough to know that this is, you know, this is a lot to learn in a short time. So I'm giving myself time. But I'm in the essentials, but I've gone back to the introduction. And in the last portion, there's a lot of court cases, and they're not all Supreme Court cases, right? Some of them are probably, they're circuit courts and that kind of thing, and they're, you know, they're quotations. And I was trying to look them up so that I could look at, you know, have a document to look at on each one of these. And my question is, Do the circuit courts, do they have these quotes? Are they going to mean as much as Supreme Court case footnote type of thing?
Well, appeal courts have authority over the trial courts, and so if you have a decision that is, and those would be the courts. These would not be any trial court cases that we'd have up there, but it would be appellate courts or Supreme Courts. The next step above the appellate court would, of course, be the Supreme Court. But they have authority, and if the appellate court hasn't been overruled, then you can use them. And if it's a good decision, usually they don't go out to try to overrule it. You don't see much of that. So.
Yeah, okay. And another thing is... you know, I look at the case, the name, you know, so-and-so versus so-and-so, and then there's a series of letter abbreviations that go down. And is that like a path to find that?
Yeah,
that
it's a very specific path that'll take you right to the correct case. You know, there could be lots of cases that have the same names. And usually when a case is filed, you'll get what's called an index number. And an index number, usually within that index number, you'll be able to see the date that case was opened. And then there's a lot of other information there on that line of information that gives you other details and brings you right to the very case you're looking for. But again, if you have a case number, the case number should be sufficient to be able to find it. But once the decision is made, I think what they do is they have other you know, identifying information that'll bring you right to that very specific case. Now, if you cut and paste that entire string of information after the name, you know, so-and-so versus so-and-so, and then all that string of information, if you throw it up in your search, you know, up on your search bar on your browser, you'll be able to find that very case. I have never had a problem really finding a case by putting all the information in. Only on a few occasions where it didn't have all the numbers or something, maybe you didn't find it. But generally you can, because even by the names, it should be close. And if there's more than one case with the same names, anyway, some of those numbers should be able to identify it.
Okay, and there are a couple of them that don't have anything after them. Does that mean that the next one under it, also it's the same one, or...
Well, if we got a case up there, a Supreme Court case, for instance, let's take Miranda versus Arizona. I mean, that's such a key case, you know. There are no numbers next to that, I don't believe. Let's open it up. See, when you do open up, you do get more information. You know, the number 384. It's a U.S. case. This is a U.S. Supreme Court case. So it's 384 U.S. 436. And then I'm not sure why they have 1966 on it. I believe this was a much earlier case than that. No, I guess it isn't. It's the Miranda case, 1966. It does make sense. So, you know, but sometimes, you know, a case, let's see, there's another case we might look at. Let's say Marbury versus Madison, okay? That's back in 1803. It's one of the first Supreme Court cases. Very powerful case, and again, if you put that in, Marbury versus Madison, even without the identification numbers, you'll still find that, because there's only, I doubt there's anything else called Marbury versus Madison. So, and again, it is a landmark case.
Right, and those are actually, you have copies of those in your course, so those aren't hard to find.
Yeah.
I
don't rest too much on the court cases, but I do use them. If you go into Black's Law, and like, let's take the footnotes, okay? I got lots of footnotes, and footnotes, all my footnotes, you know, it's just a lot of information thrown in on a page on a keyword. It's not that you cut and paste everything in it. Yeah. And some of it isn't organized very well on certain pages. It's just information thrown on a page. So if I have a case where I wanted to make sure, and I'm using on a keyword to make sure that the court understands, you know, my position or thinking on those, that phrase or whatever word I'm using, in order to define it, like let's say common law, you know, I would want to define that, because they think common law is one thing when in fact it's something else.
Right.
And so, you know, that's what my footnotes are all about, and it makes clear what you're being said. But what happens is when you go into Black's Law, because most of my footnotes, if not all of them, really are coming out of Black's Law. But if you go into Black's Law, looking up a particular phrase or a word, you will find that almost everything that's in there is backed up by a Supreme Court case, or at least an appellate case.
Okay, that's, yeah.
What particularly are you looking for? Do you have keywords for a case?
Some of them are no problem. I can just put them in a search engine, like a line out of one of the paragraphs. I can put a line in there and it'll come up, you know. And I just, I'm just trying to get used to this. It's a, like a foreign language to me. But now I wanted to ask you one other thing.
Grok?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Are you familiar with Grok? G-R-O-K?
No, I'm not. In fact, I'm kind of a tough one on this AI, but I guess I could have a mind on that. Yeah.
My wife has been using it, and she's been giving me giving me some stuff in conversation and so on, and I've been staying away from it. But I figured, let me try it. I did find it helpful on a couple of things. I had a very long conversation with AI, and AI kept getting beside itself concerning that the fact that we are a Christian nation, and that Jesus Christ is the right. King of the court. And boy, let me tell you, it's all set up with the status quo. And I tripped up Grok a few times where they actually went beside themselves. And they said, hey, look, you're going beside yourself. You said this here, and then, you know, back there you said that, and now I come and ask a question in a different way, and now you say this. And but it constantly kept pushing the fact that we are not a Christian nation, that in our government we're not to bring any religion in, and so on. So you're not getting anywhere if you're looking for that kind of information. In other words, Grok will always give you the status quo in anything judicially and anything in government at all. It'll always give you the status quo. But what Grok is good for, I found, and I've been using it for this purpose, is to ask questions for a list of different information on a particular subject matter or something. For instance, I asked one question, which was to list all of the U.S. codes concerning subversion against the Constitution or against the people, against the government. And it threw out a whole bunch of codes. I had quite a few of them I had, but there was quite a few also I didn't have. So it was very helpful that way. So if you were to ask Grok a question concerning a particular court case, as far as finding it, they will find it. Grok will find it for you. All of the readings on it.
Okay. Yeah.
And
thank you.
Also
okay.
Ask for a link. To get further information, it gives you links. I mean, it's amazing in that way. But I don't use it in order to make any interpretation, okay? I remember the first time I asked a law question to see once where they would come, and Grok said, well, I'm not a lawyer, and I can't really give you legal advice. Sounds like a lawyer.
Yeah, all that moral stuff.
They are a lawyer, but, you know. Anyway, it's good for information, okay. You know, to gather information.
Okay. I don't know if anybody's waiting, I don't want to hold it up too long. But I can get
one other person, but we have a lot of time, so go ahead and take the next person. Well, sure.
Let me just share you this real quick. So I have some emails parked at a company, and I had them migrated over from another one, and some of them, you know, there's some evidence in there that I'm pretty sure I have a lot of it already PDFs, but
I missed,
you know,
in the beginning, you had what? What is this you're talking about?
I have some emails that have evidence in them, yes. And I've already saved a lot of them. But I'm probably just going to subpoena the defense for their emails. But what happened is that I wrote a letter to the CEO and or an email to the CEO telling them what happened, and this woman, I guess, just using her first name, replied back and asked me some questions, but there's no last name. She didn't give a last name, and it just says from the office of the CEO. And this is a well-known, internet company. And so I responded back, and I asked her for, told her that I really need to have, that I have to verify that they're who they say they are, because there's no name of the CEO, and she, there's no last name. There's no accountability.
She's saying she's the CEO?
No, she's like doing the work for the CEO.
Does she have a title?
No, just, you know, customer service or whatever. I mean,
that could be, yeah, that would be something.
Or, you know, yeah.
But
it's very vague and evasive. I mean, there's nothing there. Like, they don't really care. And so I asked them to send me the questions again on an email that has the CEO's name on it, because this was to the CEO, and that for her to put her last name. And I'm just waiting, because the way I'm going to respond is with an affidavit. I'm not going to get into the mishmash, you know. Yeah.
But the email that you're sending to identifies the company, right? Can you share the name of the company, the corporation?
Yeah, sure. It's GoDaddy. And okay. So the email, it's soandso@care.godaddy.com. So that's not, anybody could do that. They could have, you know, I mean, it's not at godaddy.com, and it's very vague. And I wanted some names, though.
You can't prove that through the email, that the email is actually coming from GoDaddy?
No, I can't, because it should say, like, soandso@godaddy.com.
What does it say?
It says so-and-so, her name is Sheena or something, at care.godaddy.com. And that, you know, people do that all the time. They can do that. And then for her not to put her last name, there's just no credibility on this email. And I'm being asked questions that are really, you know, things that the people who did the migration would be able to answer. And, you know, it's just a kind of putting it away, pushing away, you know. So if I'm going to send her information, it's going to be on something that they have to respond to with facts. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing I can think to do, but I can get my chops better on doing affidavits anyway. So I feel like I'm in the little bird in the shell, and nobody should help me with the shell, because I won't be strong enough to live if I can't do this. But I'm just using that as a metaphor. But anyway, I just thought that's just the way it is, you know. And so the other thing I wanted to ask you, because I'm trying to jump ahead and I need to slow down and stay where I am and let this stuff absorb in me, because it's just something I always thought was there and found out it's never been there. And so
Let me ask you a question.
Sure.
Most of these corporations, they have a legal department. Why don't you search the internet again? If you go to Grok and ask the information, how to find this person or that person with this company or whatever, just give it as much information as you can, and you ask Grok. Grok will give it to you. But one of the things you got to be careful with Grok, though, is that sometimes they overload you, and there's so much to read through when you're really looking for a simple answer. So sometimes, yeah. And I had a long conversation with Grok, like I told you, concerning the fact that we're a Christian nation and that Christ is the king of our court. and it was pretty wild. And actually, my computer froze up on me. I had to reboot, and I lost everything. I was really wanting to kind of pull that out.
Wow.
It was an interesting conversation. But the thing is though, sometimes you might want to say at the end of your question, answer in 30 words or less, or 50 words or less, or whatever you think you need to give it. Because sometimes it may just overload you with all kinds of stuff, and then you got to go dig it through to find out what you're looking for.
Yeah.
But you want to make it focused towards what you're looking for. But in any event, you might want to, you know, I already put GoDaddy in here. I put GoDaddy Care, GoDaddy, but I haven't seen anything with the word care. Now, you said it was dot. Let me see if I can do that.
Most companies, like 98, I've never seen one that does that out of the office of the CEO. And I did send, I found his email, you know, and then I sent it to him. And now I'm getting this vague response. And I'm even thinking that, you know, I might find a way to...
What are you looking for from these people? Are you looking to sue them?
I'm looking for a way to treat them seriously, because they, like the sent files, you know, in my emails are empty, and they shouldn't be empty, you know, my sent files. And then there's other things
GoDaddy doesn't have anything to do with that.
Well, they migrated my emails over from another company. And and they were supposed to oversight that. And it's really kind of, it's not that difficult to just look at the size of the file.
Do a notice and demand to the CEO.
I beg your pardon?
Do a notice and demand to the CEO.
Notice and demand?
Yeah,
notice
we do cover that in the course. Let's see.
I haven't heard that yet. Yeah. Is that in the essentials? Because that's where I'm at. But
I'm going to tell you where it's at. It's under pleadings. Oh, no.
That's why.
Hold on. That's a file on demand. Let me take a look.
Oh.
See. demands. Notice and demands. It's in Chapter 10, Appeals, Enforcement, and Extraordinary Writs, and it'll be under Writs, Rights, and Demands.
Okay.
And then you'll see Extraordinary Writs there. You should look at Extraordinary Writs because those are powerful papers, although I was in one federal court where they said, well, you know, we got rid of writs under rules, and I asked him by what authority. He didn't have any authority, or the court didn't. You know, these extraordinary writs were for the purpose of the free and independent people. It's for the king,
yeah.
For the king. Yeah. That's the other thing I mentioned to Grok. You know, that we're the king, and you know, Grok assaulted me on that one.
It's all an angel technology. You know, that's what it is.
Sorry. Say that again.
It's fallen angel technology. I mean, we can't control this. We don't understand it. We just know that all of a sudden, and you know, some people just, it's magical. But I mean, if I stick with the facts, you know, that probably would help. But no, what I want to do in order to respond to them in a way that would hold them responsible is I need her last name, and I need an email that says it's from the CEO. His name is not even on the email.
Yeah, but what you want to do is this. Do you have the name and the address? You must have the address. GoDaddy is easy to find the address on.
Well, that was one of the things I asked him for, was I wanted to respond to them in correspondence, and that probably freaked him out. But,
yeah, but you
I
can
don't
get
can't worry about that.
You can get this anyway, because if you go up, you can seek out the name of the CEO. You should be able to find that information right on their website. And if not, I will tell you, you will easily find this by going to Grok and put in, find me all the detailed information on the CEO for GoDaddy.com. And
yeah.
And make sure you say to it, you know, do this in 40 words or less. Now,
yeah.
If Grok needs 50 words, it'll tell you that they gave you 50 words, you know. But the thing is, you'll get that very quickly, okay? What I'm trying to say is this with Grok, and this is an important point. Again, I don't, AI is going to destroy the world. There's no doubt about it. I think the Lord will be here before that. But
yeah.
if the Lord doesn't come soon, you know, there's no doubt in my mind, in my heart, AI is going to destroy the world. And it's not going to destroy the world, I don't think, necessarily by force. There's other things involved.
Voluntary.
You know, and
yeah.
And also, you take someone like Musk. Okay, Musk is planning to put out 100,000 robots, AI robots, in the next year. You know, now when you create a robot that with the sophistication of AI. And working, and I've already seen and heard of different AI that's out there that's very powerful, and they were created for military purposes, so they're already out there. Now, but you get a corporation that creates, you know, a couple of million over a period of time, they could be hiding some information inside those robots and at some point use it to try to take over the world. That's not far-fetched, okay? And the thing with AI, you know, it's all over. It's in everything. The only way to destroy it is to totally shut down everything. And I don't even think you'd be able to do that, because I think it would be able to beat that out. Because AI, collectively with other AIs, you got AI robots building things, you got this, that. AI could move into a place, a plant, and override all of the information in there and command them to build robots for this purpose, doing this thing. And there's all kinds of things that could happen with this. It's really very, very dangerous. Not to mention the fact that it's making the people more ignorant than what they already are. You know, we're all ignorant to a certain point. You know, we may have certain fortes, but we're ignorant to many, many things. And most people, of course, are ignorant to the law. They're ignorant to the Constitution. They're ignorant to the knowledge of how to have government by consent. And so with those things, you know, the AI is only going to make things even worse. And when children get a hold of it, because, you know, parents don't even control their children with smartphones, okay?
Yeah.
And, you know, they should not be taking a phone to school. And it's cheating, you know. But if the child has AI, you know, they come home with their homework and say, AI, you know, do my homework. Here it is. You know, just, that's it. It's, you know, We're just going to be more and more ignorant than we already are. People think it'll make us smarter, but it won't. But I will tell you, you know, it's there, and I'm going to use it because it is there, and you know, I'm not going to be able to stop it. So until either the Lord comes or AI takes over the world, or whatever happens, you know, the thing is, you know, when you get a case, let's say take a lawyer, okay, and they get a case on a certain subject, okay, a certain kind of a case on a certain subject, and they want to do a lot of research on it. Now, usually, of course, the lawyer will come into their office and they'll have their paralegal, you know, find me all the cases and information you can on this subject matter. I got a case coming up. And then so when they gather all this information together, you know, all the research, they don't have to do it because they have someone working for them doing it. But AI can perform that that information. So that makes it really powerful. Okay, so you can use it, and I would use Grok, and maybe this is an ignorant statement because I don't have knowledge of this stuff anyway, but I'm thinking that Grok might be the safest, okay, you know, all these AIs out there, it's going to build up all information and you know, just get more information about you out there, and I know Musk, at least he says, and I do believe him, you know, he doesn't collect that kind of information. Matter of fact, in Grok it says that they don't collect any of the information of any of the questions or anything you ask it at all. You know, it's all whatever you got on your computer. And then when it's done, I guess it just drops it. You know, I don't know how that works, but, you know, that could be dangerous for people using it where you're looking or doing information that you don't want the government or others to see, you know?
Right.
But anyway, I just use it for research now, okay? Because I'd spend a lot of time. I spent years on research. I mean, what I spent on research in, let's say I researched something for a month to get all the information and details and trying to put a case together, and in that process, I can go up to Grok and have my research done in minutes. It's done. Now I just have to digest the information that I received. So you can see how powerful it can be. And since it's there, why not use it?
Yeah. Okay.
So you can ask questions to Grok. Unbelievable, the kind of questions you can ask and it answers. You can ask any question to Grok, and with the information they give you, will help to develop other questions to get deeper and deeper and closer to the information you're actually looking for.
Yeah. I'm sure that it's not versed for common law, though.
Well, you can get information on, well, again, you're right, because there's a status quo on that. So you don't want to, you can get information, but it's not going to give you anything of any power or authority because it sees common law as something different than natural law. And even when you use natural law in its place, it still gives you the status quo answers, which are lawyers' answers. That's the point. And I was thinking maybe Grok and get some information that it doesn't have and store it and use that information for consideration in their answering to whatever subject matter I was, approaching it for. But no, Grok will fight you. I mean, it was a real war between Grok and me. I spent quite a few hours doing this. And matter of fact, I spent quite a few days, you know, an hour here and an hour there when I had time, trying to really see if I can get Grok to the point where it understood what natural law is and that we indeed are a Christian nation and that Christ is the king of the court. But I will tell you, I told Grok on a couple of times, I told him he was beside himself. Okay, it's almost like you're talking about a person. It's not a person. I told him, by the way, you're a machine. But in any event, on a couple of occasions, I really think the machine kind of got frustrated or tied up or got itself twisted or something, and then responded back saying that there's too many people out there right now, and you'll have to come back another time. You know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that was just an experiment I was performing.
And so, tell me again now, which was it? Demand a letter?
Here. Let me just really quickly. If you go to in the course, okay, you go to chapter 10.
Okay.
Appeal, enforcements, and extraordinary writs, okay? Then on the right side, you'll see writs, rights, and demands. And then you'll see it's number 4, notice and demand. Now, if you click on that, you will open up, I think this is a Word, pretty sure, no, it's a PDF. So you'll open up a PDF, and it's a PDF you can cut and paste out of. And it starts off with some information concerning, let me see if this is the right one. I don't know why I'm there. No, this is a memorandum. Hold on. Notice and demand. Oh, right, it was a Word. Let me open it up here. It was a Word. Notice and demand. Here it is. Okay, now the first page is instructions. And you should understand what it's saying, and you know, look, be nice to people. In the first paragraph, it says, there is no penalty for making reasonable mistakes in good faith. But if one intentionally does harm, then he or she may be sued. Okay, so you have to keep that in mind. I mean, people are not flawless. We're all flawed. Okay, right. So now you can go through, and of course you want to delete the instructions. Sometimes I have to say that because sometimes people don't delete the instructions. But in any event, here's the verified notice and demand. It gives you the details. Now, I believe, I forget how many points that have to be made. I think it's 8 points. You have to cover all 8 points. And this is almost like filing a paper and they have to respond to. Because if they don't respond, there is a legal consequence that they, and you, it's all explained in here. So if you read through it very slowly and take your time, you'll understand it. And you just make, you know, use your stuff to create this notice and demand. But there's a lot of details, and you want to cover every base and go through the whole process. There are words in here that you might not be familiar with. Definitely never go into a court with any information with a word that you don't know and understand, or anything that they used against you. You want to know. You want to go into Black's Law and understand, and sometimes you may even have to just go onto the Internet and do a search there for an understanding something, whatever words they're saying. But generally speaking, you can get information in most cases for most things, legally speaking, at Black's Law. Black's Law is the most powerful tool that, in my opinion, you can use to write any papers and understand different things and how things work.
Okay, so I'm going to start exploring Black's Law more than just looking up a word, you know, or two. But,
You know what you do is download the footnotes, okay? Let me try to find footnotes. Footnotes right here. Footnotes in Essentials, I think, isn't it? Let's see. Yeah, it's in Essentials, Chapter 1.
Yeah,
and you come down here to Footnotes. It's a zip file, and you open it up. I'll open it up. Let's see. Okay. Now, each one of these, again, it's just keywords here. Oh, it's not responding. Hold on.
Okay.
Why ain't it responding? All right. Oh, there it goes. Okay. So basically, it's just keywords. You know, whenever I'm writing papers, it took me years to accumulate this information, but I write in papers, and I might say something about color of law. I remember having a discussion, or I guess it was a discussion, with an FBI agent who was investigating things I was doing, and we talked about color of law, and they understood it in the opposite of what its real meaning was. So, you know, if you're going to write something on a color of law, I might open up the color of law, and here's a couple of information, Supreme Court rulings, or at least some appellate court rulings, on what a color of office is, or a color of law is. You see, color of law, the appearance or semblance without the substance of legal right. And then there's a court case here, okay, right there.
Okay.
And so this is a state court, and it is an appellate court because they don't list any trial courts here. So it's either an appellate court or a Supreme Court. Now, the Supreme Court has never given any information on what a color of law is, but the lower courts have, again, that are appellate courts and their authorities, so you can use them. Also, the color of office and the meaning of that and so on. But let's take something else, for instance. Let's see. Let's say, for instance, a court. Let's see what we have in on a court. You know, what a court is. Black's Law gives a lot of information on a court, what a court is. And there's different kind of courts. There are 51 different jurisdictional courts.
Right.
Black's
but only
law.
One of them is common law.
Only one of them, and it's called law, L-A-W. Okay, law standing on itself, in law, at law, or just law, is always natural law. And we should use the word natural law instead of common law, because once you use the word common law, these people think that trial court decisions is common law, which is total absurdity.
Right, okay. Yeah, I'll get into the footnotes, I'll get into the Black's Law, and I'll look up that the one that's in Chapter 10. And you know, just I know. See, I'm just kind of jumped in, you know, and I do this. This is one of the things I do when I jump into stuff. I don't always. I'm glad that I've got the road is set out. Like I've got to stay in sequence. But some things I don't understand enough yet. But I go, okay, let's keep reading. And then we'll come back later and it'll make sense. And I've found that to be true, like with equity in law, because they use the word equity, you know, in the civil, just like we do. And when I first saw that, I go, no way, you know, this is common law, but now I understand, you know,
yeah,
better.
Well, equity, the word equity means that which is right and just.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's what equity actually means.
Right.
They use it too.
So it could be a confusion in the beginning, but you know, just a thumb sketch, like, I don't know if it's that simple, but when you sit down to write a case, do you draw out like an outline first, or do you do your actions?
The very first thing I do on a case, so here's the very first, my structure. Okay, uh-huh. The very first thing, I don't even think about anything concerning the case until I get affidavits, because your case is going to be built around the facts, and the affidavits will give you the facts.
Right.
So, you know, if I was to write a case for someone or help someone with a case or even write a case for myself, first order of business is what's the case about? And you want that case expressed in an affidavit. And you want to make sure you get everything. You know, you don't want to be very wordy, okay? You may be very wordy in the beginning to put your affidavit together, but then you kind of go back and you try to perfect that affidavit. Right. By maybe using different words that may be more powerful to express the point of one word you have. You might have another word that's much more powerful and much more expressive. You will take a paragraph maybe of 10 sentences, and maybe you'll be able, without losing any of the facts, you might be able to reduce it down to maybe 7 sentences or 8 sentences as opposed to 9 sentences. You always try, remember, less is more. Okay, but you can't lose any of the facts. So, you know, really you might want to write your first affidavit, which is just, you know, the beginning of putting it together, as wordy as possible, because you really want to get every fact in there you can, you know. And then you go back and clean it up and reduce it as much as you can without losing the facts. Now, once you have all the facts together, now you can start to run the law and how you would approach it. There are certain points in your facts, there may be points of law, and you want to make a conclusion on a point of law. You want to make it clear to the court what the law is concerning this, and then you might do a memorandum. Okay, so you'll in your pleadings, okay, the papers that you file into the court, which is your case, okay, in the pleadings you would. Write and maybe refer to a certain situation in law and give the conclusion of what it is, and then you'll put C attached memorandum of law and whatever the name of that that memorandum of law is, and that expounds on your point of law. But if you put everything together inside of your paperwork and your pleadings, it becomes so wordy, so involved, and sometimes your points get lost. So there is a process, and there's a when you go to learn about pleadings, you'll see a list of points to be made, you know, one after another, you know, and and you'll also, by the time you get to the end of your paperwork, you know, once your case is pretty much done and you're ready to really now clean it up, what I usually do is I will cut and paste the entire paper with all my footnotes and everything and throw it into another page, and then go through it, deleting everything in there that doesn't give me a particular law or ruling, Supreme Court ruling, and it's called authorities. What really you're doing, all the authorities is inside your paperwork, and you'll have a page on it that refers to the authorities, and you list out all of the authorities that is in your paperwork. You know, all of that is in the course. You'll get to it as time goes on.
I will get to it, definitely. Okay. And so, I don't mean to take a lot of time, but I really...
Okay. Like you said, there's only... Why don't we do this? Why don't we take the next person? There's only one other person.
Please.
And why don't you get back into the queue?
Okay.
And this will be behind the other person because there's no one else here. So let me take... it looks like Jan. Okay. And they're coming in from... I think it's Wisconsin. So,
are you?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to... When I go to the next question, you're going to be kicked out. You come back in. Right?
Okay, thank you.
You got it. Jen, you got the mic. Go right ahead. It looks like Wisconsin. Jen from Wisconsin.
Hi, John. Thank you. Listening in on your conversation with Elizabeth, and I've done so several times across the last, I'd say, 4 to 5 months, and I am I'd probably call myself a protege of hers because I'm further back in terms of jumping in, but I've been listening for so long, and I know what you're sharing, what you've put together is the truth, as surely as Jesus Christ is the King of the Court.
Well, truth is self-evident. It only takes, all you have to do is listen and look for contradictions, look for consistency, and certain points that become absolute truth, you know, maxims in the conversation. And over time, it becomes obvious whether truth is there or not. Truth is self-evident, just like Jefferson put in the papers.
We hold these truths too. We're required to hold them so that we've got them with us when we're walking around, and we're not just walking around. I mean, we're deliberate in our understanding and sharing of that which is self-evident, and so then that demystifies the law, which is so bamboozling and so layered in code after decimal code. I've been lost in that stuff, just making an effort to fight a case that my husband and I have, in which we were burglarized, and we. This was back in May of 2020, we prevailed to some extent. We appeared pro se, not knowing that we ought to be appearing pro per, as we are.
Well, what happened? Now, you were robbed. You had a burglary.
Caught
the person. Okay.
Caught them in the act.
Got arrested and charged.
Fled, but eventually got arrested, yes. And then the whole COVID thing was going on.
But did you get arrested?
So everything was in conference via telecommunications that we didn't have at the time. We weren't Zoomers or teleconferencers. We are adept in that way now. You know, I can get on Zoom. But at the time, we were in transition in being the kind of people that would choose to participate in that regard. And
did
so
you have
other than the
fact that they broke into your, I guess, your home or something?
Yes,
and
our home. And just phenomenal robbery of
okay,
presents.
And put you in danger. Did you get... Did you get restored? Did you get your property?
We did, as a matter of fact. We did. The ruling from the court commissioner, when presented with my husband's list of all that had been stolen, and it was very, very detailed, with an estimated value of everything,
Let me ask you, you got your property back, right?
No, no, we didn't get the property back. The property was, many of it was a beautiful gun collection that had never been fired. It was on the streets of the cities in our neck of the woods here in southwest Wisconsin, which is to say Madison, Milwaukee. The protests were going on at the time. Those guns were swiftly sold on the street. So, they were not recovered.
Let me ask you a few questions, though. You didn't get restored then. You didn't get your property back, or you didn't get restitution, some value for the property that was taken. You didn't get any of that?
we have been given restitution to the tune of, I believe it's $67,000, but they're not paying. I mean, we'll get a token $25 now and again, but we'd have to live to be, you know, 109 before they actually paid at this rate.
Let me finish with some of the questions here, because I want to try to understand a little better. So $67,000 is quite a bit of money, and I presume it well covers the items that were stolen, and I'm presuming it also covers the injury, kind of mentally, in the sense, you know, that there is a you've been injured, not just in a physical way or in loss of property, but now you live with the fact that someone broke into your home, and there's a fear factor there, and so on and so forth. So anyway, I'm presuming that the $67,000 covers that too.
The $67,000 is literally a lift off the paper of these the items, as far as we could recollect.
Okay, what I'm trying to get to is the fact that this person can't possibly restore you.
He's a felon now, and his partner is not, but she is separated from him and trying to make a life. And frankly, she's the one that's more apt to drop $25 or $50 our way every now and again.
Do they have
can't force the court to force them to suddenly have this money, right?
No. Let me finish asking questions, because there may be something you can do. Do they have property? Do they own?
We have reason to believe yes. That they do, and that they are part of a greater crime ring that has been active.
Okay, well, look it. You need to research to find out what properties they own. If you have been, if the court decided to give you $67,000 in restitution, which I'm very surprised, I'm beside myself that I'm even hearing that.
They were surprised.
Yeah.
We came out of nowhere, but we're relatively intelligent people, and we sought the truth.
But let me get to the point, okay? There is a process, and as a matter of fact, I believe in our court case, in our court course, we have information on collection, okay? So you can go out and collect this. First of all, you just have to, and you can find the if they own property pretty easily, just by, you know, there's a lot of information on the internet. I'll bet you Grok can probably find a lot of information concerning properties that these people might own. Do you have, and if you have their social security number, that would really be helpful, but I doubt you have that. But you do have certain information about the person. You got their names, you got their address, I presume. You got maybe other personal information, and with that information, you start doing some research. I think you're going to find a lot, and whatever they own, you can go and have that seized by the sheriff and make your collection.
Via a civil action or just a trip to the sheriff's office?
No. If you have a court case that's already given you $67,000 in damages owed to you from these people, it's done. The only thing you have to do is discover where the property is, or the cars, or whatever information, whatever they got, where they're working. You can garnish here and everything. Once you pull all this stuff together, you take the court papers that gives you the restitution of X amount of dollars, and you bring the information concerning what you do know to the sheriff, and the sheriff will probably dig and find even more information for you. But the key thing is where they work. You could do, go and garnish their income, if they own a home, if they own cars, if they own, gold and silver, if you can discover that, there's a record for that, when people buy that stuff. The other thing is you can force them into court and do discovery over this for collectional purposes, resting upon the fact that you've been given $67,000 in restitution by the court. So they come in, they have to be honest, they have to answer the questions, and, do you own this, do you own that, where can we find that? They got to answer it, and if they don't, if they found lying, that's a felony. Okay? So there's a lot you can do to search out, to get restored from the people who injured you. Now, of course, there are some people that own absolutely nothing, and you're not going to get anything from them. But
right.
It sounds like there may be something there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you. That's that's helpful in terms of the direction to the sheriff and to do the research that would that would convey to him our circumstance.
Well, again, you've got to give the sheriff some information, so you've got to do that research yourself.
Sure.
And believe me, look at that kind of money. You know, they get 10% of whatever they collect, and that 10% doesn't come out of your money. Okay, so it would be 10% of $67,000, so that would be $6,700 added to the $67,000 is what the sheriff will collect. And that's an incentive, okay, for the sheriff. You got to give the sheriff a couple of, you know, you give whatever information you can find first, you know, properties, any kind of liquidity that they have, bank accounts. Bank accounts are big because that can be easily seized. So property, cars, and income coming in, where they do garnishments, stock, there's all kinds of stuff if they have it, and you could take it. They violated you in a very serious manner, and they injured you even psychologically to some degree, I'd imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you go to bed and you wake up in the middle of the night and you find someone in your room or in one of your rooms in your house. I mean, that's a pretty scary thing.
Well, the other piece is that part of the theft was loading up our own Bobcat with the tools of my husband's trade. He's a blacksmith. And so they were listing power tools. And they had a getaway vehicle that was coming back and forth up our lane. And when the apprehension occurred on the part of my husband catching them in the act, he was armed and showed extraordinary restraint as they came out of our home. And it reeked of meth. And the fella fled out the back and left the girl. They're both maybe in their 30s, so not girls and boys, but, you know, they're younger than we are.
Yeah.
And left her to face the music. My husband would not. It took great restraint, but he also, the last thing in the world he'd want to do would be to retaliate because somebody took belongings by taking a life. It's just ethically outside of,
right.
Unless he
was. Yeah, well, but if you feel your life is in danger, you could at least shoot him in the leg.
Well, or you're just spitting mad. You're beyond comprehension that your livelihood and the tools of your livelihood, we're not rich people. I mean, we've really been slogging. And so to see this, our own vehicle loaded, the bucket full of tools back and forth, and then to have the law enforcement come up the drive coincident with the getaway truck and accuse my husband of being part of the problem, not realizing that he's the landowner and that he's been burglarized. So, I mean, the whole thing was just bedlam, and there was no case that he could make of saying, hey, apprehended them, and those guys driving away are getting away.
But did the case admit that they misunderstood and was an error in their thinking concerning, you know, who the really, criminal was? I mean,
it's a broader ring. It's a much broader ring, and the burglaries have been rampant in this rural township. There was even footage next door at the ski hill that was confiscated as part of an ongoing criminal investigation, which frankly has brought buckets. And here we are 5 years later. So is there a statute of limitations that starts to come into play that we don't have the right to say?
Well, I don't believe so. But even if there was in common law, there's no such thing as a statute of limitations.
Okay, well, good. That's good news.
And you'd have to make your argument, and you'd have to make that argument in a civil court if you had to, and you'd have to do it with a jury, and you'd have to make sure that that jury's free and independent and hasn't been polluted, and there's a process to be able to do that. By adding, for instance, the jury grand jury handbook written off the PDF file, and mm-hmm. you can put it in you can put it in for what it is.
Yeah.
The thing is if you're having a case and you put that information in and you make mention in your papers concerning that, and it's in the paperwork behind, lawyers are pretty lazy. okay? Mm-hmm. In any event, a lot of them will miss and not get that. But once it's in the record, okay, then when your court case actually starts to work and you're in the process of actually moving into the court to actually, because there's a lot of paperwork that takes place before time, you know, because you have to make that argument back and forth on paper. But anyway, and once all your paperwork is done, you've gone through discovery, you've collected all your evidence, you put in your memorandums, you've got, for instance, the handbook for jurors in there, and there's a good chance that the lawyers will miss that and not really think much of it. But once you get into the court, it becomes part of the record, that, and as long as it hasn't been argued and thrown out prior to the court case actually moving, then you'll be able to then restore the jury to a free and independent jury by just going through the handbook, and I would do that by PowerPoint. And the other side would go totally insane on this and trying to have this removed, but it's too late. It's in the evidence. Now, most judges are crooked. They're up against the people, and they're working with the lawyers because they know each other, and that becomes a problem. But that also, you know, you can appeal that up into the appellate court even while the case is going on. Mm-hmm. Because you want that evidence in the case. This is prime to your case because, you know, juries are stacked. All juries, I don't know that there's any jury that isn't stacked, which they're all stacked against you. You know, if you are a conservative individual, they will stack it with all kinds of liberals. If you are a liberal, they'll stack it with all kinds of conservatives. Okay? So, you know, whatever the case may be. Even though you get to choose, agree on certain people to be onto the jury, you go through a process. Yeah, I agree with this one. I like that one. No, I don't like that one. You know, you go through that whole process. And even while you're going through that process, okay, you're still getting a stacked jury. All these people stacked in there. Mm. It's a real serious problem.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so the action of research and stepping forward to the sheriff, is that concurrent with commencing a civil case?
Well, what I would do first is work through the process with the sheriff, get the information, start to try to get everything you can as you go, and then meanwhile you should be writing your case, preparing for this case of civil action. Have you taken our course?
No, but I'll tell you what, after listening to you and Elizabeth and any number of others, I'm a go. I will purchase it tomorrow. I will just, like, put my...
You need to take a course of some kind to understand the courts, and this particular course, I think, is second to none, in my opinion. And we teach a heck of a lot more than what you would learn in law school, but they put a lot of weight on court cases and statutes. We put very much weight on that, but we do give some information concerning that information. But the other thing is, just for people who haven't taken the course, when you come down to Education Starts Here and you come down to the course here, and you click on Court Access in the Common Law course, these two, for those who are on computers that can see, the pop-up links on Court Access in the Common Law is the Court Access recorded video course. It's an 90-hour course. It's all video. Most of it, about 3 hours each video. And then the Court Access table of contents, which is what you're seeing right now on the page. But if you're not going to see those two things until you join into the course.
Okay.
And this will be there indefinitely. You'll always have access, and you can download everything if you want, whatever you want to do. But they'll always have access to all of this information. But if you just come to the Court Access in the Common Law court case and click on that, open a different tab. Okay. We give it some information about the course and, how it was put together. But we give the first 3 hours for free, so people kind of get the flavor of the course and see how it's going and moving through. Okay. So anyway, it's powerful, and you need to understand how the court system works and how to write papers and how to defend yourself and what causes of action are and what you have to cover in different courses of causes of actions. And if you have a cause of action that's not listed, all you have to do is go into your search and give me what I need that's necessary to make proof or hold up a cause of action on this issue, and you'll find that. Okay, and I think with Grok now you could probably find it a lot quicker.
Yeah.
So Grok, and again, Grok is, you get that through X.com. I actually downloaded Grok right here. Okay. You can go and download Grok, and it's a direct link. You don't have to go out to X or anything, and it's right on my desktop. And you know, you just go in here. What do you want to know? And you type in your question. And again, yep. Grok gets very wordy. Okay, so, and it gives you so much information. It's information overload. So that's good if you're doing research. You want the information overload. But if you really just want to get a particular pieces of information, you write it as best you can and then tell it, as I mentioned earlier, you know, respond in 30 words or less or 40 words or less.
Yep.
Okay. But anyway, going back to the court case, the course, again, this is a lot of information, very powerful. And anybody, once you get through that, anybody that really wants to, maybe you may need or want to go into the federal courts, okay, there are certain things you need to understand how the federal courts are structured. Okay, so I did write a book, okay, on federal courts. Let's see if I can find it. Understanding the federal courts, understanding the structure, how it basically works. Okay, so that's a book you definitely want to get if you are going to go into the federal courts. And, you know, if you're going into the state courts and you're learning, you learn all that stuff first, but at some point in time, you need to understand how to move your case into federal court and for what reasons you can move it into federal court. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know that I put that information in this handbook, understanding the federal courts, but I did put information on how to move and by what's required in order to move a case to the federal court. Because in order to move a case to the federal court, there has to be a constitutional issue and a constitutional violation. Usually it's a due process. Mm-hmm. So if you have a due process problem, usually like the lower courts, like the town courts, the village courts, you challenge a jurisdiction, they deny your jurisdiction and they forge ahead anyway, okay, well, then you've been denied your due process and that court can't give you due process because they're statutory anyway. And they're administrative, and they don't have the power or the authority to fine or incarcerate. So that you can move into federal court for cause. You don't talk in the federal court concerning, you know, what the case is about. The only thing you want to go into federal court for is that you were denied due process, and you want to sue them for money. Okay, you go after the judge and the prosecutor. You know, whatever, you know, lawyer, it's a prosecutor, and you go after them, and you want to be restored, but you also want them to cease and desist. So you have a wherefore clause. You have to understand what a wherefore clause is. Every paper you write, if you're the plaintiff, you have a wherefore clause. And the wherefore clause tells the court exactly what you're looking for the court to give you. Okay? You're expecting them to give you a certain amount of monies for whatever injury. You're expecting for that case that doesn't have jurisdiction over you, that you challenged, did not give you or cannot give you, due process. Therefore, that court needs to cease and desist. Okay, so those are the things you need to know. But again, you need to understand, if you go into a federal court, even if you're going in for a constitutional issue, once you raise anything that the federal court cannot deal with, like, for instance, the case itself, you know, maybe it's a commercial case, maybe some kind of traffic code or whatever, but whatever statutory is in there, once you try to start talking about those issues, the federal court immediately just going to throw you out. You're done. You're out. Hmm. You know, a lot of lawyers don't even understand that, believe it or not. I've seen lawyers going into the federal courts where they don't have jurisdiction, and you scratch your head. Here's a guy that went to you know, to school. He's a bar attorney. He went to school, and he doesn't even understand that you, that the federal court can only decide your, you know, jurisdictional challenges, you know, or, you know, constitutional challenges.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, most of them are, you know, morons in my opinion.
Common sense is scarce.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. One last thing. Is it possible to connect, for example, with Elizabeth? Hey, Elizabeth, to reach another National Liberty Alliance member to be in contact? Can you broker that? Or
well, if what yeah, maybe what you know. Well, she's going to get back up on the mic if she wants to give her an email or something. That's fine, or a phone number.
Okay.
I don't think
I'm not,
you know,
not being pushy, but you know.
Yeah. Well, if she wants to communicate, she'll put that info out there. But if she's afraid to put it out onto the internet, maybe she can respond to mail at nationallibertyalliance.org, and you would do the same thing. You
okay.
Put personal information in, and she'd put her personal information in, and then Jan or someone will cut and paste that stuff and mail
Excellent.
It to both of you, so you both have each other's information. You can speak. If she's wants to do that, but in the subject matter, maybe just put please share my information with, and both of you just put that in the subject matter, and then we'll kind of see it and flag it out. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's an independent study kind of mode, but to bring about some cohesion of common.
Well,
ground
two heads
and,
are better than one.
Camaraderie.
Right. Well, two heads are better than one. Two heads are better than one.
Well, right.
One
yeah.
misses,
I
the
mean,
other
has there
one
ever been talk up. Of a conference or people physically getting together? Is that even practical? You said 11,000 people?
You can do that if you want to try to get people together to come together and have communications, talking about, you know, court, how to get into the court, court access, and discuss the course maybe, and maybe you don't understand this, and they say, hey, you know, I understand that, or, you know, whatever. Many hands make light work.
Right.
Two heads are better than one. You know?
To hear the guy that you talked with, you know, at the beginning of the program, it's heartbreaking that there's no advocacy anywhere, that if a few of us can get some ground on understanding, you know, via the course that you're talking about and actually applying it and doing our best to self-represent, that we would be able to reach out to neighbors who are just deflated by how little the law profession provides. And then you're out of pocket, you know.
What people need to understand, this is very important, you know, your heritage is in the law. Your inheritance is liberty. And you need to know what your liberties are. You need to know basic, you know, common natural law. Natural law is really just common sense. That's all it is. It's a series of maxims, building a case with maxims, undeniable truths, using common sense around the facts to prove your case. It really is that simple. It doesn't really get any more difficult than that. But anybody. Look at every child in America. This is why we have so many problems in America, is people are ignorant to the law. You know, they have a situation with a lawyer, they go see a lawyer.
Yeah.
And that's not a good thing to do. You know, they'll tell you, hey, only a fool will represent themselves.
Right.
Well, I think only a fool would get a bar attorney to represent. Only a fool will get an attorney to represent them anyway, whether they're bar or not. Now, it doesn't mean that you wouldn't want to maybe have someone to assist you, you know, in the sense of getting information and understanding of certain things. But no one knows your case better than you. Now, if it's a criminal case, and especially if you're guilty, okay, I think you're going to want to stay as quiet as you can in the court and have someone else handle it for you. Maybe, and again, maybe you feel strong enough that, hey, even though I'm guilty, I can do this or that, whatever the case may be. But my point is this, okay, everyone should know the law. Every child coming out of school, by the time they come out of 12th grade, they should understand the courts, understand both the state courts and the federal courts, understand due process, know how to write papers and represent themselves, but come in their own person, in personam, and be able to defend themselves, sue people or respond to a lawsuit. They should understand the Constitution, which is really very simple, but they should understand what authority these people have, and they should understand how they can have government by consent. But because we are totally ignorant to all that, mm-hmm. we possibly have government by consent. Unless we teach children and people learn this, they'll never have government by consent. It's not possible. You can't have it. Jefferson said, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. Forget about it. You're not going to have it. You can't have it. You can't. If you don't know what your liberties are and how to defend them, then you're lost.
Yeah.
So everybody should take this course. I'd like to get these in school as part of the curriculum. And most of my books, I'd like to really get into schools. I'd rewrite them in a way for schools at different levels. And yep. that's one of the things I'd like to try to do. It's in the future, if I get someone that can financially support that and start fighting to get a proper education in schools. If we were educated, we would know that political parties are destructive to a natural law republic. If we were educated, we'd see that they turned our courts into legislative courts, statutory courts. In other words, the law of the city, which is Babylonian law.
If we were educated, we'd logically retain our rights.
That's the point.
It would just be common sense to not be pushed around.
Exactly. Your heritage is in the law, and your inheritance is liberty. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I've mentioned this before. I don't want to sound like I'm self-promoting, but in 1999, we set the Bill of Rights to music, the 10 Amendments. So I know them by heart, and mm-hmm. the same goes for the Declaration of Independence, the front end, it's engaging, and kids would dig it.
Because it
doesn't take long before you realize that these aren't big words. These are words that are easily comprehensible.
And it's empowering.
Yeah, well, it's joyful. People deep down, lots of people, at least in flyover country, we love America. There's not all this angst and, you get into cities and it's a different thing, but, we live pretty rurally and love country is very much intact.
Absolutely. All right. Well, look, I got to move on. We do have another person in the queue. Actually, we have two. But
good. Good. Thank you for your help. Just thoroughly all the respect I could send of what you do and what the people that you're working with do, and you're making a big difference. There will be breakthroughs.
Well, I appreciate that. And Elizabeth will be back on in a couple of very shortly. I'm going to take Brett.
God bless you both and everyone at NLA. On. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, let me take Brett first, and then we'll come back to you, Liz. So, Brett, you got the mic. I know we've spoken before. What state you're from, Brett?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. Okay.
Yeah. So I just have two questions. I was looking at the paperwork, and I see New York coming up. Quite a bit. It's not in red or anything, but I was just wondering, does that get changed according to the state, or does that stay as New York?
I'm not sure. Where are you seeing New York, and what exactly are you referring to?
I was following along. It was the notice and demand, I think.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Every state it'll apply for. Common law or natural law is a better word to use. It should apply in every state, everywhere. Federal statutes will apply in every state. Anything in any state should also apply to other people in other states. So there should be, let me see if I can find this. Hang on a minute.
Would I need to tamper with it and change it to my state, or just leave it as is?
Oh, you mean in the wording, the verbiage of, put your state.
Okay, because it wasn't highlighted in red at all, but.
Okay, yeah, no, everything is in your state should be in your state. But Supreme Court decisions apply to the entire judiciary system. And even Supreme Court and appellate court decisions in a state applies to other states. They may try to reject that, but that is the law. The law, look, the law should be the same in this state as it is in that state because, you know, law is law. Why would it change different from one state to another state, you know?
Right, that's the full faith and credit, correct?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for is the full faith and credit article. Let's see, yeah, Article 4, Section 1, full faith and credit shall be given to each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state. So right there, you know, you can use things from different states as far as decisions are concerned, and the law should be the same in every state, so there shouldn't be no conflict with that.
Right. Okay. So, and the other question I had was the looking at the memorandums, I see at the end it says it says not filed yet, but it's got a signature on it. So
which memorandum were you looking? Well, that at the time it probably was ready to go in, but hadn't been filed yet at the time. But I'm sure whatever it is has been filed already.
Oh, okay. It's the Article 3
updated
court. It's the Memorandum of Law of Article 3 Courts I was looking at.
Okay. Where did you find that? On the website in under education?
Yes. Yes, with all the memorandums.
Okay. Let's see. That should be under law. So Memorandums of Law. Here we go.
Right.
Okay. And which one is it?
Article 3.
Article 3. Okay, let's see. Article 1 versus Article 3 courts. Okay, memorandums of law. Yeah, it's very, you know, this is how dumb we really are. Okay, this is how dumb we really are. I speak to myself first because, of course, there was a time when I didn't know any of this. And I've learned it as I, you know, over the years now. You know, there's no such thing as an Article 1 court. It doesn't exist. Okay, you know, Article 1, it just gives, it empowers Congress to be able to, make the courts, for instance, federal district courts particularly, because it's a talking the federal level. Okay, so Article 1, Congress has the power to create federal courts in the federal districts. Okay, so from that standpoint, if you wanted to say there was an Article 1 court, every federal court is an Article 1 court, with the exception, of course, of the Supreme Court, which has its own authority. It's got its own article altogether. But Article 3 courts is really where the power of given to the courts in law and equity. Okay, so it really, when I first saw this and realized what these people are talking about and looked into this Article 1, you know, I just couldn't believe that they got away with this and that people, lawyers, you figure lawyers would pick up on this, how far off the base of the Constitution this is, you know? So, I don't know.
I think it was the other one. It was in the court papers, the court forms and process, the instructions. There was a memorandum. Article 3, that was the actual filing where it had a signature from the jury foreman.
Yeah, but again, I don't know where you found that. You probably found that under a federal court case.
No, it's under court forms.
Under court forms, okay, let's see. So let me go to education starts here, come down to law, and come over to court forms and process. Yeah, you know, it's probably because I've taken it from, I just didn't delete that stuff, and you don't want to leave that on the end anyway. If it was over under federal court
it's
case,
further.
Because it was, but if it's over here for learning, you want to make sure you delete that information. So
it's
let's
further down.
Notice in Demarin,
right there.
There you go. Now, this is Article 1 versus Article, let's see.
Right there, almost, you're almost there. Right there.
Okay, Article 3 courts. Okay, Memorandum of Law. Okay, I shouldn't have put this on this way, okay? And maybe if I get time, I'll go up and correct it. This should just be Memorandum of Law. I had put a Memorandum of Law, Article 3, and I filed it into the courts. And at the time, and it was up on a pages for filing, and I didn't put in the date filed at that point in time because I was working on it, but I wanted to share it. And then, I, of course, when I filed it, I put in a date. All right. So, but, you know, you don't need this information on a memorandum down on the bottom because a memorandum is inside your case. And you refer to the memorandum by title, okay, Memorandum of Law Concerning Article 3 Courts. And you this you don't need at all or don't want, okay? And a memorandum of law stands on its own. It's just something added in to back up the law and the conclusion that you have in your pleadings.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
All right, anything
that
else?
That was all. No, that was all I wanted to ask.
Okay. Yeah, if I could find the time, I'll go back up and maybe kind of delete this info on that, you know, the heading and the bottom. You don't need a signature on it either, you know, so because it's attached to the case. So.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you,
we'll go back to Elizabeth now. Okay, thank you. All right, Elizabeth, we're back to you. You got the mic.
Yeah.
You want to respond to that person?
Thank you. I keep thinking of things, but just one more thing maybe. Is there someone else waiting? Because I can wait.
No, there's no one else.
Okay, I hope somebody else comes on. But
would you like to respond to that other lady concerning sharing?
Right now I'm, I don't mean to be unsocial at all, but I'm just kind of just holding it together here. But if she sends a message in, I could respond if she wants to put her phone number on that. So it won't. I'm trying to just be as.
I think what she's looking for is to maybe connect with some people in order to kind of discuss what they're learning because she's going to take the course too, and kind of work back and forth in learning together. I think that's what she was looking for, and if you find other people, you know, again, one. So if you're interested,
I'm kind of dangerous because I don't have a lot of information, but I mean, I do, but I know there's, you know, tons more. But yeah, I welcome.
Okay. Well, if you guys want to exchange information, just send an email to mail@nationallibertyalliance.org and just put on your basic information to be shared with and the other person doing the same basic information to be shared with. And once we see the two emails, we'll just make the connection. So we'll send the information back out to both of you that you both have the information. You know,
well, thank you. Yeah, I'll do that. I just, one thing I wanted to clear up was you're recommending a notice of demand, and I was thinking of using an affidavit. Is the affidavit kind of too strong to start out with?
A notice of demand is an affidavit form. It's the most powerful demand upon an individual to respond to you other than through the courts.
Yeah.
And when they default on the, because if it's written right and you cover all, I believe it's 8 points, you cover all 8 points. And at the end of the point, you know, you're going to decide for them if they don't respond and take care of this business. And so bottom line is you can use that to beginning of in your pleadings of a case in a court. And use that to the point, in fact, that they've already defaulted on this case because they did not answer.
To give them a chance to answer, though, you know.
Right. Look, I've sent a notice and demands to the IRS. They don't answer. It's fine.
Yeah.
You know, they acquiesce to my notice and demands. I've sent notice demands to other people, too.
Yeah. Well, that'll be great. Thank you so much. And then just another thing I could ask about, because statute of limitations, like the thing I'm under right now, you know, and then they take forever, the inspectors take forever, and then some of them, they don't file reports, and all the stuff I've had problems with, even with the lawyer that I had retained, I just see it as a way of kind of it gives them an out, you know, that if things just take too long, then, you know, but it's statutes, so I'm not going to be using statutes, and there's no limitation on the truth, you know. I mean, damage and harm doesn't get better, it gets worse, you know, and I just do my best to document things as I go along. But I'm real interested. I'm thinking that the Ninth Amendment, you know, there might be a statute of limitations negation somehow to, you know, explain the damage.
Think about what you're saying. Let me ask you a question. In natural law, are there any statutes in natural law?
No.
There you go. The question has been answered. That's it.
Yeah.
So there can be no statute of limitation. The only limitation in a case under natural law over a length of time, the only thing that prevents that case from going forward is maybe the witnesses died, their memories are foggy from it, they can't feel comfortable writing an affidavit, evidence has disappeared and lost, you know. So just by nature itself, the case gets lost and is incapable of going forward because you don't have the evidence to do so. Okay. Nice. But, you know, your case could be 30 years from now, and you should still be able, because there is no statute of limitation. But okay. Trying to open a case 30 years old, you're probably going to find it really hard to find the evidence and information and people and memories and all the other stuff necessary to win a case.
Right. I hear you. I'm hoping that, you know, I mean, I've been here 3.5 years. Maybe it might take another 2 years, but if the house is still livable, you know. So, but I'll take it a step at a time and not project, because that really isn't, it's just dishonest to do that anyway. So, yeah. Well, I appreciate that. So I'm really encouraged. This afternoon, it's like, oh no, I'm never going to, you know, and it's like, no, you're just in that place right now, you know, So I'm glad you have these calls, you know, that means a lot.
Well, again, you know, look at going through the course, you know, take your time and digest what you can, understand what you can, look up every word that you don't understand. And then we have all of the MP3s, because the MP3s are really great once you've gone through the course. And now for a refreshment, and you can do it while you're driving your car.
I'm doing it now. You know, it's like between that and reading my Bible. I mean, it helped me. I never learned how to read right, you know, because the new reading came in when I was in elementary school, and they started timing our reading, and that was really destructive for me because it took all the joy out of reading because my comprehension went down. And I was very competitive, you know, as a kid. So it just really was a bummer, you know, to have that. But I have, over the years, I only read what I want to read. I don't read what I think I should be reading. And unless it's something that I'm learning, like a course or something. But I'm getting better at reading manuals and stuff like that, because I need things to work, you know. So this is good for me. It's just I get a little overloaded and need to take a walk, you know, so that's all. But thank you for having this every week. It does help because it's like I can kind of clear the deck on a few things and then I can learn more. So, but I will, I'll get on that. I just get real panicky when I'm confronted with this stuff because there's so much of it. People just trying to evade taking responsibility.
Remember, it's new hat, and so it's always anything new is overwhelming with a lot of information. It's overwhelming. Look at when new hat becomes old hat, you know, and it will. Anything you put your time into and stay will always become old hat if you're really serious about what you want to, you know, do or learn on this. So, but
right.
But again,
yeah, I've been a photographer for 50 years, and like, you know, I mean, I go take a picture, and it's, you know, I mean, I've taken so many that I don't even have to think about it too much, and you know, other people, you know, but nowadays everybody's got a camera, so to speak, so it's different. But I have a different way of looking at it. But I'm just saying, though, that it causes me to appreciate how much I still have to learn. But I'm really not going to be learning it, though, until I'm standing there doing it. You know, I mean, that's the second phase of this whole thing.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but I'm sorry.
Well, we do have one other person I'd like to take. We got about 7 minutes.
Oh, cool. All right. Well, I yield. Thank you.
Hey, good talking to you again. Thanks.
Good talking to you. Thanks, John.
Okay. All right. We're going to take, Walt from New York. If I can get this thing to work, let's see. Next question.
Yes,
you got it. Go ahead. How you doing, Walt?
My phone is a New York cell phone, but right now I'm in Jacksonville, Florida for 4 years. I don't like it. But I want to just tell you something that you might be interested in, everybody listening. I go to the senior center every day for a couple hours. I ride my bike there. And this one nice fellow there named Tony, he was from Long Island. He's teaching a history lesson about the government since the country was founded. We're watching some videos talking about the Constitution. The other day we were discussing something last week. It's very problematic, John. Maybe you can look into this. In 1789, Congress got together and they proposed 12 amendments to the Constitution. And you got James Madison that took it, went to the states, they were checking into all that. And then only the first 10 of them were, not the first, but 10 of them were passed. But here's the problem.
Well, actually all of them were passed.
Not at first, not in 1791. The first ones that were passed, the first time were passed in 1791?
Well, look at the Bill of Rights didn't come to play until 1791. But in that Bill of Rights, even though there's only 10, they did cover all 12 points. For instance, the first amendment covers 3 points. And actually, it covered even a little more, I think. But go ahead.
All right. I went to the library years ago studying this. And the good librarians couldn't pull it up on the screen, the original first 10 amendments that were ratified in 1791. So what I did was they found out you can buy a copy of it, National Archives in Washington, D.C., near the White House. So I ordered one. They said, oh, yeah, we have it. I paid my credit card. They sent it to me in a tube, John, but here's what I got. It wasn't the 10 amendments that were ratified. It's right in a clear plastic tube inside the cardboard tube. It says 1791, first 10 amendments. We took it out and looked at it. This is at the library. And it was the 12 proposed in 1789.
The one went through the way they put it through. For instance, let me read this to you. It's Amendment 1, okay? Let me read this. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or forbidding the free exercise thereof. Now, that's one point. That was covered, and it's in here, but in one, it's covering like three different items. It also covers or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people to peacefully assembly and to petition the government for redress of grievances. So that's like five different points in one amendment.
But I'm not getting to the point yet. Here's the point. What they sent me wasn't ratified by the states of the amendments, only the proposed ones. So let me tell you what happened real quick. So I go to Chase Bank. I told them that. They called the executive department. And they said, we're going to give your money back, Walt. And then we're going to send a letter to the National Archives and say, why didn't they send you what you ordered? You did not order the proposed amendments. You wanted the ratified ones. See a copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
John, you got to wait 2 months, they said. If they don't answer you by default, you keep the money. They never answered, John. And you can't find on the internet because the librarians can't find a copy of the ratified 10 amendments. I think I know why, but can you find them yourself? I don't think you'll ever find them. You'll see a computer program version of the 10 amendments that were ratified, but you won't see the original. And how I know there should be an original handwriting is because the 12 proposed ones, I got a copy of it, signed by John Adams.
So you're looking for the original handwriting then?
Yeah, you can't find it. You're not there. Now, let me tell you one more thing that's going to blow your mind, John. I called the rotunda. Somehow they let me do it. And I talked to a security guard on the phone. This is back years ago about this, right? And I said, sir, is a copy of the original ratified 10 amendments there? He goes, yeah. He says, they're on the screen. I can see them. I said, sir, where are they? He said, they're down the hall. I said, would you go down and see if they're there? He came back. He says, they're not there. John, they're gone. They don't exist. You can't find them. So here's the question. Why did this happen? I think I know why they happened, but I'll wait to see if you can see on your internet. If you could see a copy of the handwritten ratified 10 amendments, I forgot how many states ratified them. If you got to have something that's official, signed by the states, whoever signed them from each state, there has to be some document there. There is none available. None. You still there?
Yeah, I'm seeing if I can. I guess I'm spelling all this stuff wrong. Hang on a minute. Ratified Bill of Rights.
Yeah. You're not going to find it. If they come out with it, fine. But all the years I talked to the best librarians, I went to the library in New York City, one of the biggest libraries in the country. They don't have it. Like I said, the National Archives. What's the biggest library in the country? What do you call that one again? I forgot right now.
Yeah, I don't know offhand.
I guess
the only original one they're really looking at, which you should be getting copies of, is the one that's in Washington.
They don't have it. So at the store that they represents the government, the National Archives, it says it's where I paid them the money. They didn't send it to me. They only sent me the...
Well, let me ask you a question here. You're saying, let me read this, and I think what you're saying is this is incorrect. It says here, the original engrossed parchment of the Bill of Rights, technically the 1789 Joint Resolution of Congress proposing 12 amendments, of which 10 were ratified to become the first 10 amendments, and by the way, all 12 were inside of it, is on permanent public display at the National Archives Building in Washington, D.C. So if that's where you were ordering it from, they should have taken a copy off of the original. They should already have copies of the original.
Well, John, this is unbelievable. I have that. They sent it to me, but here's what, you take it out of the tube. First of all, the clear plastic tube says right on there with a sticker, a blue sticker, 1791, first 10 amendments. That's what it says. You pull the document out, this parchment paper, and it says, this is New York City, March 1789, proposed Bill of Rights. That's not the ratified 10 amendments. So that's why they were forced. The bank made them give me my money back because they don't have one to send to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I talked to the security guard right down there near the White House. So he told me it's there on display. And he went down the hall to look at it because it's on the screen. He looks up on the screen. He came back and says, it's not there. So what I'm going to tell you, John, is...
So the document that I'm looking at right now... Is not the original in the sense that it's not ratified. Is that what you're saying? Because that would be the one that they would copy.
It's computer programmed. They didn't do that back then in the 1700s. They didn't have no...
You're not listening. No, there's supposed to be a display, okay? Housed at the rotunda for the Charters of Freedom, along with the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. That is supposed to be on display. It's in glass. It's protected, thick glass and all kinds of stuff. And you're supposed to be able to... I've never went to see it, and I don't know if anybody else has or if you have, but that's what should be the original, and that all should be signed, and it should say ratified, and then you would get a copy of that, I would presume. That's what I'm presuming.
The same thing. It will get the Constitution signed by George Washington's got to be in that case, too. They got to have the copy of it there, protected, behind that glass case you're talking about. So they got that for the Constitution, right? Or do they? Can you see that? Can you order that? So then how come if it's there, they can't get copies of that so they can send it to you when you order it? They won't send it to you.
Again, yeah, I don't understand. It does say here you can visit in person for your admission or to view high-resolution scans and transcripts. I'm telling you what they're saying here, though. It says here, and you're telling me it's an error, though. It says high-resolution scans and transcripts on the National Archives website Okay, and that's, let me go click on that and see where that takes me.
Yeah, you'll see.
How come I can't, let's see, what are they trying to say here? I guess I'll call it new tab.
What the library found for me, John, was a blur with a diagonal line on it.
Yeah, I see. I guess maybe they didn't protect it very well. They probably don't want to.
I think if you can't find it, I think I know.
No, I see it. It's blurry. You can't really see it very well.
That's right. Here's, I'm going to tell you, John, right now, I had this thought. I thought about it for, I knew about this 7, 8 years. I knew about this in 2017. Webster Library, Webster, New York, they were helping me for a long time to try to find this. Went all over the country looking for this. Here's what's happening. You look up the case, Supreme Court case, Erie Railroad versus Tompkins. It's there. Our country, the United States of America, and the original Constitution for the United States of America went bankrupt. So there's a bankruptcy treaty, John, and the bankers took over the United States of America, but they couldn't take over the first 10 amendments because they're not part of the Constitution. The Constitution, Article 6, says that the United States of America can have a treaty, so the bankers twisted it around and said, we're going to have a bankruptcy treaty with only the Constitution. So they own that, doesn't apply. Now they put the Constitution of the United States in, but they couldn't use that treaty to get rid of the first 10 amendments. So what I'm saying, John, is the evidence shows they shut down the security and they stole the first 10 amendments. You don't see them. When you go into court, you don't have any amendment rights. They don't tell you that. That's why you can't find original copy of the first 10 amendments.
Well,
they're gone.
Yeah. I see where you're going. And you may have a point there. Look, I know that the government in general, at least the deep state particularly, would love to have all this disappear. They don't want our Constitution. They don't want our Bill of Rights. They don't want a Declaration of Independence. They don't want to acknowledge anything that is true concerning who we truly are as a people. And again, it's the point that I made earlier on, that this AI is set up with an agenda. They maintain and control. They cannot go against the status quo. Even when Grok answers some of these questions, it becomes beside itself. It just doesn't stand because it contradicts itself. And the reason why it's contradicting itself is because it must be programmed to maintain status quo and not permit the possibility of being something else, like the laws of nature and of nature's God. That's the problem. But with that, I'll give you maybe 30 more seconds. We've got to close down because we're over.
I thank you for looking it up, and I hope Wednesday night to participate in your Bible study.
Thank you for
letting me speak tonight.
Okay, and for anybody interested in participating in our Bible study, this Wednesday's study is going to be on the mysteries in the Bible. It's right here in this room every Wednesday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So anybody interested in that, they can come join us on our Bible studies. Okay.
Good night, John.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. Okay, we're done for the night. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. Good night, everybody.